series going on atonement that will wrap up next Sunday. Willing. So this is message number 2 in that series now. The title of this message is Imperfect Atonement. And we'll be looking, starting here with Hebrews chapter 9 and verses 1 to 10. Then verily the first covenant had also ordinances of divine service and a worldly sanctuary. For there was a tabernacle made, the first, wherein was the candlestick and the table and the showbread, which is called the sanctuary. And after the second veil, the tabernacle, which is called the holiest of all, which had the golden censer and the ark of the covenant overlaid round about with gold, wherein was the golden pot that had manna and Aaron's rod that budded and the tables of the covenant. And over it the cherubims of glory, shadowing the mercy seat, of which we cannot now speak particularly. Now when these things were thus ordained, the priests went always into the first tabernacle, accomplishing the service of God. But into the second went the high priest alone, once every year, not without blood, which he offered for himself and for the errors of the people. The Holy Ghost is signifying that the way into the holiest of all was not yet made manifest, while as the first tabernacle was yet standing, which was a figure for the time then present, in which were offered both gifts and sacrifices, that could not make him that did the service perfect as pertaining to the conscience, which stood only in meats and drinks and divers washings and carnal ordinances imposed on them until the time of reformation. So at the Leeds Institute of Cardiovascular and Metabolic Medicine, researchers have worked on a pill that could trick the body into thinking that it's exercising. So the idea for the pill is to mimic a natural protein that the body produces while exercising. And so this would result in a widening of the veins and increased blood flow by increasing the heart rate, all by taking this little pill. Now, the benefits of this would be improved heart health, lowering of cholesterol, reducing the risk of stroke and of heart attack and various things such as that. You know, all those reasons why the doctors tell us to exercise regularly. Now, the initial idea for the usefulness of such a drug was for people with disabilities and other mobility conditions and such that prevented them from actually exercising regularly, that possibly taking this would help and get them some of those benefits without, you know, being able to actually do the physical exercise. But it's not too hard to imagine the billions of dollars that a pill like this would make in the diet and exercise industry. People are always looking for some magic potion, some shortcut to lose weight and to get in shape and gain all these health benefits. Now, the article that I read about this pill also gave some cautions, and there are some warnings to be concerned about with such a pill. And some of those were about the fact that the pill would not bring about any of the other benefits of real physical exercise, things such as mental health benefits, physical stamina and endurance, the gaining and strengthening of muscles, and the benefits of mobility and flexibility that physical exercise actually brings to us, and a whole host of other things that we do actually gain benefit from. Now, obviously, we don't know if this drug will ever make it to the market, but it would work like many of the drugs that have made it. In other words, a lot of the medicines and the pills and things that we have are so designed to trick the body into providing us some sort of benefit. Many of the pills that we have today really are treating symptoms, and they trick the body's chemistry to get this desired response in order to help the underlying problem. And oftentimes we know that these pills can have a lot of undesirable side effects. Well, this somewhat illustrates how that the old covenant with its law, its tabernacle, its priests, its sacrifices, how all of that worked. In other words, here in our passage where we read, verse 9 says that it did not make the adherents perfect. So they, those that observed the rites and the ordinances and the services and the sacrifices and the offerings, and they observed all those things that even if they observed them impeccably, it did not make them perfect. Now, the writer of Hebrews is using this term for perfect to speak of being brought into an everlasting state of complete reconciliation with God. And that's what he said, that observing all of these things of the old covenant did not accomplish. Now, that's what's indicated by the biblical concept of atonement, a complete covering of sin and a full reconciliation with God. So in this message, we want to understand why the old covenant atonement was, in fact, imperfect. So in the last message, we looked at Leviticus chapter 16. And in Leviticus 16, we have the establishment of the Day of Atonement. And this was to be a yearly observance in Israel. And so Moses had instructed the people to build this tabernacle, which was a large tent consisting mainly of two rooms. They were to build this tabernacle according to the pattern that God had showed him on Mount Sinai. And Moses was to ordain the priesthood that was to serve in this tabernacle and the high priest Aaron. And then we read about in Leviticus 16 this elaborate ceremony every year where the high priest would enter into the Holy of Holies. That was the innermost room within the tabernacle where the Ark of the Covenant was placed with the mercy seat lid on it and would make an offering for all of the people of Israel. And again, this he would do once a year. Now, the Day of Atonement dramatically illustrated the very real problem of the distance between a holy and a righteous God and an unholy and an unrighteous people. So within the tabernacle, we had these veils, the outer and the inner veils. And then we have the smoke of the incense that was required for the high priest to enter into the Holy of Holies. And all of those things, even that smoke of incense, provided a covering, and it maintained at least some separation between God and man. Even the high priest, who was the only one allowed to go into the Holy of Holies, and he could only do it on one day a year, and he had to do it with blood, and he had to do it with the smoke of the incense covering the mercy seat. So all of this elaborate ceremony and sober ceremony that's repeated every year only seemed to further highlight and emphasize the distance between God and man. Now, if we understood the Old Testament better, we would never think that we could be reconciled to God by our works. It would not be possible for us to comprehend that in our minds. They had this tabernacle, had this furniture that's overlaid with gold. They had all of this carefully wrought ornate veils that were made and curtains. And they had priests that were consecrated and placed into this office. And all of these sacrifices and rituals and observances and washings and everything that took place. And for all of that, they still were not reconciled to God. The writer of Hebrews says in verse 9, they were not made perfect. For all of that, they were not. So what are you and I going to do? What are we going to come up with that is better or that is more effective than what they had in the Day of Atonement? Well, that brings us to this message today. The fact that the Day of Atonement was imperfect and it did not actually accomplish atonement. Now, this doesn't mean that the Day of Atonement served no purpose or that it was an attempt to accomplish atonement and it failed. Doesn't mean that at all. The Day of Atonement served the purpose that it was designed for, which was not to provide an actual real atonement, but rather it served a temporary purpose to point and to indicate what that better atonement was that was coming. Now, in this passage here in Hebrews 9, the writer of Hebrews identifies five problems or five shortcomings in the Day of Atonement and the related services and such. And that these five shortcomings are what it was that made the Day of Atonement an imperfect atonement. And so these are what we want to look at. The five shortcomings were the Old Covenant. Secondly, the earthly tabernacle. Thirdly, the Aaronic and Levitical priesthood. Fourthly, the restricted access. And fifthly, the animal sacrifices. All five of these are shortcomings in the Day of Atonement that made that atonement actually imperfect. So we want to look at these here, beginning with Hebrews chapter 9. We're going to look at some other passages in Hebrews as well as we work our way through this. Five shortcomings of imperfect atonement. And the first of those would be, beginning here in verse number 1, the imperfect covenant. Then verily the first covenant had also ordinances of divine service and a worldly, or that is earthly, sanctuary. Now the first covenant that is being referred to here in Hebrews is referring to the Old Covenant, which is another way of referring to the Mosaic Covenant that he received on Sinai. Now this Old Covenant had all of these things that are being referred to in this passage. In other words, when we think about tabernacle and then later temple, and we think about Ark of the Covenant, and we think about priests and golden candlesticks and basins for washing and altars and laws and rites and observances. And when we think about all of those things, understand that the writer of Hebrews is telling us that all of those were comprehended within the Old Covenant. They are a part of the Old Covenant, the tabernacle, the priesthood, the most holy place, the sacrifices, all of these things that are referred to. They were a part of the Old Covenant. And in fact, they were actually unbreakably a part of that covenant, as indicated in places like Hebrews chapter 7 and verse number 12, where it is written, "For the priesthood being changed, there is made of necessity a change also of the law." Now, we're not going to get to all of this in this message here this morning, but there in Hebrews 7, the context is actually talking about the difference between the better priesthood of Jesus Christ, which is not after the law, and the priesthood of Aaron and the Levites, which is after the law. In other words, one is after the Old Covenant, one is after the New Covenant, and that being of the new is better. Now, the point that's being made there in Hebrews chapter 7 and verse number 12 is that you will have either the Old Covenant and the Old Priesthood, or you will have the New Covenant and the New Priesthood. But you cannot have both. And you also cannot have some mixture of them both. The Old Covenant and the Old Priesthood are one. The New Covenant and the New Priesthood are one, and it's either or. And this is obviously the book of Hebrews is written to Jewish believers that have professed faith in Jesus Christ, who have endured much persecution and are actually, many of them, on the verge of turning back to Jerusalem and the temple and the priesthood and the Old Covenant. That is the reason that the book of Hebrews is written. And so what the writer is communicating is that you will have that, and by that you have an imperfect atonement in the Old Covenant, or you will have the New Covenant with the new priesthood and the new atonement, which is an actual real atonement. So again, we're not going to get into all of those things here this morning, but understand that the writer of Hebrews is showing how that all these things that belong to the Old Covenant must stay with the Old Covenant. Now, the Old Covenant was imperfect because it could not bring reconciliation with God. There's nothing about the Old Covenant or within the Old Covenant that can actually make a person reconciled completely and everlastingly with God. Hebrews chapter 7, verses 18 and 19. For there is verily a disannulling of the commandment going before for the weakness and unprofitableness thereof. For the law made nothing perfect, but the bringing in of a better hope did, by which we draw nigh unto God. Now this idea of disannulling, he's talking about the old covenant with the old covenant law and all of that being disannulled, and what the word in the Greek is indicated, it's being set aside in a sense. It's being set aside because it has been fulfilled, is what we understand. And if it could have, in other words, if atonement, real atonement and reconciliation with God, if it could come through the old covenant, if it would have been possible in any way for it to come through that old covenant, then there would have been no need for a new covenant. The writer of Hebrews is saying, in fact, there would be no new covenant. This is what he wrote, Hebrews chapter 8, verse number 7. For if that first covenant had been faultless, then should no place have been sought for the second. And down in verse 13, in that he saith, and here he's talking about God, in that he saith a new covenant, and he's referring to the Old Testament, where God says, behold, I will make a new covenant with the house of Israel and the house of Judah. It says, in that he saith a new covenant, he hath made the first old. Now that which decayeth and waxeth old is ready to vanish away. Now the point is not that there was something wrong with the old covenant. You know, oftentimes today, some new product will come to the market, and it's discovered that it doesn't work properly. There's some problem with it. The technology, it doesn't quite work. And so we'll get an update, or we'll get, sometimes they'll do a recall and they'll, replace and reconfigure some parts or whatever that the case may be in order to get a second version, you know, that works a whole lot better. That's not what is being said here about the old and the new covenant. It's not saying that after God got the old covenant going, that he looks down and he realizes, this isn't really working so well, so I need a better plan. That's not the point at all. The old covenant worked very well. In fact, it accomplished the purpose for which it was given. What we have to understand, though, is that the old covenant was given for a temporary purpose, and that it would be done away with when it was fulfilled. It's no longer needed, and it's no longer in effect. As he says, the writer of Hebrews, it is disannulled. So, we also see this in our passage here in Hebrews chapter 9. We've got these references that show us the temporary nature of the old covenant. He speaks about that first covenant. If you look down at verses 8 to 10, it says, the Holy Ghost is signifying that the way into the holiest of all. Now, the way into the holiest of all that he's talking about is through the old covenant, the tabernacle and the Day of Atonement, all that. He says it was not yet made manifest. That not yet. Notice that. It says, while as the first tabernacle was yet standing. It says, which was a figure for the time then present, in which were offered both gifts and sacrifices that could not make him that did the service perfect as pertaining to the conscience, which stood only in meats and drinks and divers washings and carnal ordinances imposed on them until the time of the Reformation. So you see that the language that the writer of Hebrews is using is bringing out that temporary nature, that temporary purpose for the old covenant. And in fact, once that's fulfilled, it's going to be done away. Well, that word for reformation that he uses there at the end of verse number 10 is a word that refers to a new order. There's going to be a new order put in place. And in this case, he's referring to the new and the better covenant as you read Hebrews in context. So the writer expresses in chapter 10, verses 1 to 4, how that the old covenant failed to make an actual atonement. For the law, having a shadow of good things to come, and not the very image of the things. In other words, it doesn't have the substance of what is to come. It just has a shadow of what is to come. Can never, with those sacrifices, the sacrifices that belong to the old covenant, which they offered year by year continually, make the comers thereunto perfect. And there we have that word perfect again, which again is referring to making an everlasting, complete reconciliation between God and man. It says, for then would they not have ceased to be offered, because that the worshippers once purged should have no more conscience of sins? But in those sacrifices there is remembrance again made of sins every year. For it is not possible that the blood of bulls and of goats should take away sins. So the old covenant was designed as a shadow of what was to come. It wasn't the substance. It was never the substance. It wasn't that it failed to be the substance. It was never given to be the substance. It was designed to be a shadow, a forerunner that announces the coming of the substance, that indicates it, that points to it, that gives us some idea of its shape. That's what the old covenant was given for. And the old covenant had an imperfect atonement. The second shortcoming is here in verses 1 to 5, and we'll also grab verse number 9. And that second shortcoming is the imperfect tabernacle. Then verily the first covenant had also ordinances of divine service and a worldly sanctuary, earthly sanctuary or tabernacle. For there was a tabernacle made the first, wherein was the candlestick and the table and the showbread, which is called the sanctuary. And after the second veil, the tabernacle, which is called the holiest of all, which had the golden censer and the ark of the covenant overlaid round about with gold, wherein was the golden pot that had manna and Aaron's rod that budded and the tables of the covenant. And over it, the cherubims of glory shadowing the mercy seat, of which we cannot now speak particularly. And in verse 9, which the end of verse 8 speaks of the first tabernacle yet standing, which was, speaking of that tabernacle, which was a figure for the time then present in which were offered both gifts and sacrifices that could not make him that did the service perfect as pertaining to the conscience. The tabernacle that is referred to, this is the tabernacle that Moses built. Later it was, by God's direction, it was replaced by the temple that was built by Solomon, but it served the same purpose under the old covenant. This tabernacle was a worldly or an earthly sanctuary. It was made by the hands of men. And he says here in verse number 9 that tabernacle, as long as it stood, or the temple later, as long as it stood and had full services operating, as long as it stood, it was a figure for the time then present. Now that word for figure is actually the word for parable. The tabernacle, as long as it stood, was a parable. That's what the writer of Hebrews is saying. Meaning that the tabernacle itself and all of its services, all of its furnishings, was a parable. Or it was a symbol of the true tabernacle, which, as we will see, was not an earthly tabernacle at all. So in Hebrews 9, down in verse number 24, the writer writes, "For Christ is not entered into the holy places made with hands." And here he's talking about the tabernacle or temple of the old covenant, which are the figures of the true, but into heaven itself, now to appear in the presence of God for us. Now, part of what he's saying here is that Christ did not, like Aaron and the high priests after him on the Day of Atonement, he did not enter into an imperfect tabernacle that had been made by the hands of men and constructed out of all of these earthly materials that was only a shadow. It was only a figure. It was only a symbol of the true tabernacle. Christ didn't enter into that tabernacle. He entered into the true tabernacle. Now, in Hebrews chapter 8, verses 4 and 5, "For if he were on earth, he should not be a priest, seeing that there are priests that offer gifts according to the law. who serve unto the example and shadow of heavenly things. As Moses was admonished of God when he was about to make the tabernacle, for see, saith he, that thou make all things according to the pattern showed to thee in the mount. So the earthly tabernacle of the old covenant is not, was not, never was the true heavenly throne room of God. It was only a representation. It was a copy of that heavenly throne room of God that was made by men and stood on the earth for a time until it had served its purpose. So whatever blood is offered in that tabernacle, whatever blood that high priest entered into the holies of holies with, whatever blood was offered there was not offered in the true tabernacle of heaven. So it's an imperfect tabernacle. It cannot effect actual atonement. Verse 8 shows us also that this tabernacle was not the true way to God. Verse 8 says, the Holy Ghost, this signifying that the way into the holiest of all was not yet made manifest. In other words, that Holy of Holies in that earthly tabernacle, that was not the true way to God. And this Day of Atonement with the high priest and with all these services and everything that took place, that was not the actual way to come into the presence of God. It was an imperfect tabernacle. Thirdly, it was an imperfect priesthood. Look at verses 6 and 7. Now, when these things were thus ordained, the priests went always into the first tabernacle, accomplishing the service of God. But into the second went the high priest alone, once every year, not without blood, which he offered for himself and for the errors of the people. Now, the priests that he is talking about here, Aaron and his sons and the Levitical priesthood, they were designated by the law of the covenant. Hebrews chapter 7, verses 11 to 12 says, if therefore perfection, and here's that term again, by which he means everlasting, complete reconciliation with God, if perfection were by the Levitical priesthood, for under it the people received the law, what further need was there that another priest should arise after the order of Melchizedek and not be called after the order of Aaron? For the priesthood being changed, there is made of necessity a change also of the law or of the covenants. That's something we'll get into more at another time. But there are two problems that are pointed out here with this imperfect priesthood. Two problems with this imperfect priesthood. First of all of those priests from Aaron on down, all of those priests that served as long as that tabernacle or temple stood, were all sinful men themselves. Hebrews chapter 7, verses 27 and 28. Who needeth not daily as those high priests, the high priests of the old covenant, to offer up sacrifice first for his own sins and then for the people's. For this he did once when he offered up himself. For the law maketh men high priests which have infirmity. But the word of the oath, which was since the law, maketh the Son, who is consecrated forevermore. So it says that he entered, but not without blood, in Hebrews 9, 7, which he offered for himself and for the errors of the people. So one of the problems with the Old Covenant priesthood was that, and what was a priest according to the Old Covenant? A priest was an intermediary. A priest was someone that stood between and interceded between God and man. A priest was someone that was attempting to make reconciliation between God and the people to bring them back together. That's the idea, the concept of atonement. But he says the problem is that under the old covenant, you could only ever have a priest that's just as sinful as you are. So how is it that your sins have separated you from God, and a man who is just as sinful as you are is going to be able to stand between and lay hold of both and bring you together. It can't happen. It's an imperfect priesthood. The second problem is that these priests under the old covenant were all mortal men. In other words, they were bound to die. And their priesthood lasted only as long as their lives lasted. Hebrews chapter 7 and verse 23, "And they truly were many priests, because they were not suffered to continue by reason of death." So, the priest you would go to was a sinful priest. He's an unholy and unrighteous priest. And that's the case of all men. And like you, he was also bound and doomed to die. So what if you were going to this priest and you're bringing your offerings and you're observing all of the rites as you're supposed to, and what if he dies before you do? What happens then? What happens to the intercession and the mediation between you and God if he's the one that's supposed to be interceding between you both? Well, this again points out the imperfection of the old covenant priesthood and how temporary that this mediation was, that it didn't actually accomplish reconciliation. Fourth shortcoming in Hebrews 9 is imperfect access to God. Verse number 8, "The Holy Ghost, this signifying that the way into the holiest of all was not yet made manifest, while as the first tabernacle was yet standing." So the tabernacle and its services only served to reinforce the separation between God and man. You had the veils, you had the outer veil and the inner veil, and the Levitical priest would enter in that first veil, but they could not enter into the second. The high priest alone could enter into the second, but only one day a year, and then he had to do so with blood, having offered for himself first. He had to do so with the smoke of the incense so that the mercy seat was covered, that he could not see the presence of God there in any way. So, in other words, this tabernacle and all of its services, even though it's pointing us to atonement, is actually further emphasizing how separated that we are from God and how unable that we are as human beings to bridge that gap. Now, verse 8 means that the Spirit taught through this that all that way of access into the presence of God was not made plain in the old covenant. Again, it's a shadow. It's just like the mercy seat covered in smoke. We can't see it clearly just by looking at this day of atonement. In other words, access was restricted, and no amount of sacrifices would ever grant full and free access into God's presence under the old covenant. So this would necessarily mean that reconciliation was not accomplished. And the fifth shortcoming is imperfect sacrifices. Imperfect sacrifices. Verse 7, "But into the second went the high priest alone, once every year, not without blood, which he offered for himself and for the errors of the people." Verses 9 and 10, "which was a figure for the time then present, in which were offered both gifts and sacrifices, that could not make him that did the service perfect as pertaining to the conscience, which stood only in meats and drinks and divers washings and carnal ordinances imposed on them until the time of Reformation." The sacrifices of the Old Covenant were various animals, depending on the particular observance, if it was like the Day of Atonement, or if it was some other particular observance, or depending on the sin that was being confessed, or the peace offerings, those communal offerings, depending on the type of offering and the reason for it and all that, they could be different. But there would be goats, there would be calves, there would be bulls, there would be lambs and rams, and even some birds in different types of offerings and sacrifices. So he's showing us clearly through this old covenant that blood is required to atone for sins. Now, that's one of the things that he talks about, that almost all things are purged by blood. And without shedding of blood, there is no remission of sins. And blood is required to atone for sins, but the blood of animals is insufficient to atone for the sins of men and women. That's the point that's being made here in Hebrews. Hebrews chapter 10, verses 1 to 4. For the law, having a shadow of good things to come and not the very image of the things, can never with those sacrifices which they offered year by year continually make the comers thereunto perfect. For then would they not have ceased to be offered? Because that the worshippers once purged should have no more conscience of sins. But in those sacrifices there is a remembrance again made of sins every year. For it is not possible that the blood of bulls and of goats should take away sins. Notice he says it's not possible. It's not that they just haven't found a clean enough animal. It's not that they just haven't offered enough animals. And that was one of the problems pointed out, I believe, in the book of Micah or Malachi. I forget the reference off the top of my head. But it was pointed out that they thought that they could just multiply the number of offerings until they just created an absolute river of blood that flowed from the altar. And by multiplying their sacrifices, they would be able to actually atone for their sins. But it's not possible. It cannot. So under the old covenant, there is no atonement for sin, no actual atonement, no real atonement that is accomplished. Hebrews chapter 10, verse 11, and every priest standeth daily ministering and offering oftentimes the same sacrifices which can never take away sins. And one of the things that is pointed out in Hebrews is that those sacrifices were repeated continually. Day of Atonement came every year. Other sacrifice, there were many other sacrifices according to the law, and those things were repeated time after time after time after time. And he's saying they could never take away sins. The very fact that they were repeated shows that the blood of bulls and goats is not sufficient to atone for the sins of men and women. So that's even being taught to us in the Old Covenant. So it was an imperfect sacrifice. So again, we've talked about how that the Day of Atonement and the atonement of the Old Covenant was imperfect. It didn't actually accomplish atonement. Well, did the Day of Atonement actually accomplish anything? Well, yes, it did. It did actually accomplish what could be referred to as ceremonial cleansing. Here in Hebrews chapter 9, verse number 13, for if the blood of bulls and of goats and the ashes of an heifer sprinkling the unclean sanctifieth to the purifying of the flesh. In other words, this is put against the purging of the conscience back in verse 9 and then on later in that context there. So in other words, the flesh was sanctified. In other words, what was considered ceremonial cleanness was accomplished by the shedding of blood of bulls and of goats, but not the actual forgiveness of sins. Ceremonial. In other words, being qualified to re-enter the camp, to rejoin the camp of Israel, to being qualified to come into the court of the tabernacle and later of the temple, being qualified to bring the offerings and the various things that were required of you. Ceremonial cleansing or ceremonial cleanliness, it was actually accomplished under the Old Covenant, but that is all. It was just skin deep. It was just surface deep. It did not penetrate to the heart, did not penetrate to the conscience. Real sin was not purged through this. So the Old Covenant, with its law, with its tabernacle, with its priesthood, with its sacrifices, it served a purpose, but that purpose was not to actually accomplish redemption or reconciliation. That wasn't the purpose of the Old Covenant. Chapter 10, verse 1 says that it was a shadow of better things to come. So it's a forerunner of that reality. And it served that present time until the coming of the new order or the new covenant with Jesus Christ. So again, I ask, what could you or I produce better than the Old Covenant? If we are seeking to make ourselves clean, if we're seeking to make ourselves holy, if we're seeking to make ourselves righteous, if we're trying to reconcile ourselves to God, what can we produce better than all that? Well, whatever we would come up with, it would be nothing more than a pill that would trick us into thinking we are reconciled with God when we are not. If those things were not sufficient, and they weren't, then we need something better. And that is the writer of Hebrews' whole point. That old covenant was not sufficient to actually take away sins. You need something better. And that something better is Jesus Christ. And in our next message, Lord willing, we will consider how atonement is actually accomplished.